CinemaJaw is brought to you by, do you create online content? Whether it's writing, photography, music, video, a blog, a comic, or a game, if you create original content, then you deserve to get paid for your effort. OnScribe makes it super easy to add subscription buttons to your content using known and trusted payment services like PayPal and Google Wallet. Users can subscribe to your content without needing an OnScribe account, and you get paid immediately. OnScribe charges no additional fees or commissions on your subscriptions, and it's free to get started. Check them out at OnScribe, that's onscribe.be today, and get the credit you deserve. And by KensAnglers.com. Corporate fly fishing trips in Colorado are the hot item for 2015. Corporate fly fishing trips are a great option for team bonding events. It's time for your team to retire their business suits for a while and surround themselves with unforgettable and breathtaking nature, as well as some adrenaline-pumping fly fishing action. The team at Ken's Anglers has years of professional experience as anglers and guides. Corporate fly fishing trips is where Ken's Anglers excels. Please contact them with any questions or check out their website at kens-anglers.com. to book your corporate fly fishing trip today. You can also call them at 303-501-5247 or email them at kenrobak@comcast.net today. Listening to CinemaJaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is
Rye the Movie Guy, and this week on CinemaJaw, Matt, we get in the DeLorean, and we drive around town, and we see what the Back to the Future filmmakers got right. Now that we are into the year Marty McFly traveled to in the future, Matt, happy 2015.
Happy New Year, Ryan. Yeah, I'm excited. They do have a lot of the things that were predicted in the Back to the Future film.
So. Such as the flying cars?
Well, you know, not so much. But they do have a hoverboard.
Do they?
Yes.
Really?
Really.
You don't think that's just some trick on the internet?
Absolutely not. It's for real.
Look it up. Throw it in the jaw box right off the bat. Elias, look up if the hoverboard is real. I don't believe Matt.
It's completely real, but you need to be on a special track, and they're $10,000 each.
Wow. Well, I don't think they actually got a lot of the things right when you look at that depiction of 2015, and we're here now, Matt. Not a whole lot went right.
We should really talk about that after we bring in our guest.
We will.
Okay, good.
And our top five this week, because of 2015, Back to the Future, let's look at movie, you know, the way the future is depicted in movies with our top five sort of future depiction movies.
Yeah, and I think once before we have covered best dystopian films. So at least for my list, I tried to go a little more optimistic.
As did I.
Okay, cool.
I got some fun picks on my list this time.
Okay.
All
me
right.
Too.
Yeah. There were some big movies that opened up over the holidays. We got two big reviews
for
you.
Yeah, The Interview.
Ooh, did you see it?
No,
I know
I
Elias
did.
We'll get Elias' take on The Interview.
No, didn't see it.
I did not see it either. I'm in not that big of a rush
to see it. I did see Into the Woods.
Great. I saw it as well. And I also saw Angelina Jolie's Unbroken.
Nice. I can't wait to hear your review.
Thanks, Matt.
Is Angelina Jolie in the film?
She's not. Just directed.
Okay.
In addition to that, we have a guest joining us. It has been a couple of years since Al Roker Jr. has been on the show.
Didn't seem like that long ago. I think because his presence, I don't know, it's always there. And he's a close friend, so I'm happy to have him back.
Yes. Radio personality here in Chicago, has his own podcast. Great guest. You're going to love him, Jawheads. Plus, in addition to that, Matt, yourself versus Al Roker Jr. in 2014, we look back at 2014 sequel movie trivia. There were a lot of them.
Sequels and remakes.
And while we have Al Roker Jr. here, I and it's now 2015, I wanted to tell him, and I know he's going to agree with me, there is one movie everybody is anticipating more than anything else.
I know, right?
In 2015.
Clearly, the Avengers.
No, buddy, it's Star Wars Episode 7.
Oh, no, it's Age of Ultron, the Avengers.
You can't be serious right now.
Yeah, completely serious, like a funeral.
Cinema War. Oh, boy. Boy, oh, boy. That is going to be... You are going down in flames, Matt. I'm going to take my lightsaber and stab you in the chest.
Just don't stab me with a little hilt thing on the side.
So it is a jam-packed jaw, as always. Matt, without further ado, we bring in our guest. He is a radio personality in Chicago. He used to be on the Man Cow morning show. He has his own podcast. Very interesting guy. Al Roker Jr., welcome to CinemaJaw.
Rye, Matt, how you doing? Good to see you guys.
It's great to have you back. I can't believe it's been as long as it has been, dude.
It's been a couple of years, but, you know, we always end up hanging out together and running into each other. And so that's why it hasn't seemed like it's been that long, because it hasn't been that long since we've all seen each other. It's just been a couple of years since we've done this together.
Right. Yeah, no, I saw you just last month at the original Mothers here when we did our little party.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
So it doesn't seem like that long, but we have to have you on more.
Please do. I'd be happy to do it.
Does anybody like a little party more than Al Roker Jr.?
No, I don't think there is. It really isn't. I'm going to grow up one of these days, but I don't plan on it anytime soon.
Now, for the jawheads listening to this that are confused why we're calling you Al Roker Jr., this actually got started with Mancow, who was a shock jock here in Chicago and then spread all around the country, syndicated. He actually came up with the nickname Al Roker Jr., correct?
Yes, I am. You know, people ask me all the time, oh, are you really Al Roker from the Today Show's son? And depending on the type of mood I'm in, I'll tell them yes or no. What we always said during the show was, you know, Mancow's not a real name. Turd is not a real name. Freak is not a real name. Al Roker Jr. is not a real name. So that's not my real name.
And you were on that show for a long time.
About 14 years.
And long enough, we're actually, right before we started recording, you actually said you responded more to people calling you Roker or Al Roker Jr. than you did your name, Ken.
All my friends still call me Roker to this day. And even at WGN, where I work now, doing news, most people refer to me as Roker. Yeah, even though I'm Ken Smith on the air. And I was Ken Smith on the air when I was doing my show on 87.7, The Game. Rest in peace.
Yeah, and we'll get to that. But I got to tell you, I heard a news break that you did. I think it was Lollapalooza. It was in the summertime. And they were like, and now we go to Lollapalooza. Ken Smith is there in Grant Park. And then you started talking. I'm like, whoa, she got his name wrong. I just handed it off to the wrong guy.
I was just being a good soldier that day because I was at Lollapalooza and I figured, well, what the hell? I might as well do a story and send it in so that they have a little something and I can get to my drinking. So that's what I did.
It always comes down to the little party.
Yes, exactly.
So what's going on with the game?
The game is gone. Game over.
And the game was a new sort of concept at WGN Radio, another sports radio talk.
Yes, they referred to it as the little brother of WGN. Instead of the sister station, it was the little brother. And it was Chicago's first FM sports talk station. And it was 87.7 FM. And it launched last year in February and February, March. And it passed away just recently on December 31st. 2014.
Why such the short run? I mean, a radio station sometimes takes a while to grab an audience, doesn't it?
Yes, that's what we all said. And I guess they just decided to cut their losses. We were all shocked that the station only lasted 9 months. They just decided to cut bait.
And was this the first time that you did a strictly a sports show?
I mean, I've been doing sports for years. I have been doing sports on Mancow's show for 14 years. I was sports director over at Q101.
But it wasn't a full show. Like this one was actually four hours
sports talk. Right. Exactly. And this was sports talk. And this is, I called the show The Game Changers. And it was myself and Abe Cannon, who I know you're both familiar with.
Sure.
And we worked together on the Mancow show, and he had his own show on Howard 101. We both felt that 4 hours of sports talk, especially on a Saturday night, would be boring. What is it that we're going to go over on Saturday night that hasn't been hashed over 10 times over between Monday and Friday of that week? So we tried to keep it a little bit lighter, a little bit more on the fringes. Yes, certainly. We talked Bulls, Bears, Blackhawks, Cubs, Sox, and we had fun with it. But we also, you know, just tried to keep it a little bit lighter and have more fun with it than, you know, 30 minutes of who's going to replace somebody at the guard position on the Bears for this week's game.
Right.
You know?
In addition to this, you actually have a podcast that you were putting a lot of the clips from the game onto the podcast.
Yes, you can go to alrokerjr.com or search that on iTunes, and it's Roker Radio, and the podcast is still going. But yes, as over the past year, because of my involvement with the game, A lot of the content that's been on the podcast over the past year have been excerpts from my show on the game, which is fine because hopefully you're out partying on a Saturday night and not sitting at home listening to the radio.
Right.
Yeah.
Between 8 p.m. and midnight. So it gives you an opportunity to hear a lot of the celebrity interviews and things of that nature that we're doing.
And the podcast, the focus of that, was it also sports-centric?
No, not at all. The podcast, the focus on the podcast is anything and everything.
Okay.
We were on it once.
We were. We talked movies. Yeah, yes. We called in and we did movies.
And I wanted to have you guys on my show on 87.7 The Game so we could talk some sports movies.
Right.
But what ended up happening was, and my show was on from 8 p.m. to midnight on Saturday nights, what happened was once college football season started, the station started airing college football doubleheaders, and they would eat into my show. They would either preempt the show completely, or the show wouldn't begin till 10 p.m.
So when it was
cut, and then same with Blackhawks hockey. WGN airs Blackhawks hockey, but they were also airing the games on 87.7 The Game. So if the Blackhawks were in Vancouver and the game started at 9 p.m., it would blow my whole show out. So when I did have shows from September to December, most of the time they were only 2 hours long, and so I'm not able to fit a good sports movie segment
right
into just that short amount of time. So I apologize for that, fellas.
That's okay. It's okay. When you get preempted like that, are you just sitting around in the studio playing Pac-Man on your phone? I mean, are you at home waiting for the call?
No, I mean, they usually I'll find out a few days before because they want to have the schedule finalized because they don't know if they're going to run a game that week or not going to run a game that week. But, you know, we usually would go in and do a couple hours of show prep before the show. But if it's a situation where I'm not going on till 10, I won't get to the radio station until 8. If it's a situation I'm going on till 8, I'll get there at 6. But oftentimes, you know, those college football games, they'll go long, they'll run into overtime,
Hawks too.
Hawks too. So there were times where we're sitting there looking at our watch going, come on.
No doubt. Now I know it's a sad time as the game ends, but I'm sure you're going to bounce back somewhere here in Chicago radio. You're a fixture here.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you from your mouth to some program director's ears.
That's right. They all listen to Cinema Jaw.
Good.
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
Why aren't we getting on the air, Matt?
I said they'd listen.
The other thing, though, is for the jawheads listening to this that want to follow you online, the best place to go online, website and Twitter and all that good stuff?
Yeah, alrokerjr.com. Follow me on Twitter at alrokerjr. Also, Al Roker Jr. Facebook page. Probably the easiest is either alrokerjr.com or Twitter at alrokerjr.
Sweet.
Yeah. Look forward to seeing where you end up in your next gig. And we'll come on there and we'll talk movies.
I appreciate that. I will be doing news on WGN, so you'll hear me there. You may be turning on WGN one day and hear me doing some report from somewhere.
Can you get them to kick it to Al Roker Jr. instead of Ken Smith?
it's funny. There have been people that have called up and say, "Give me a yay yay," and whoever's on the air is like, "What the hell are they talking about?" And I'm just kind of giggling to myself.
That's awesome.
Now, when you do the, do you do morning news on WGN?
When I was on the game, I was doing sports updates on Jonathan Brandmeier's show.
Okay, Brandmeier.
So, it's where I guess I'll become a trivia question one day. It's like I've been on Brandmeier's show. I've been on Mancow's show. They have it all pretty much figured out over there at GN. So I fill in. I do part-time. Mm-hmm. So if somebody calls in sick or whatever, it's the holidays, and then they'll call me and go, "Hey, can you come down and do news today?" It's like, sure. So no specific real time.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Well, let me tell you, Al Roker Jr. is sitting in on this entire jaw. You can hear him right here on Cinema Jaw. That's where you can hear Al Roker Jr.
That's right.
And he has his top five favorite future depictions in cinema. Matt, it brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, Interest or Ignore. And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
Premier Box Breaks, Rye.
Tell me more.
A box break is a service event where a breaker will open a box, case, or pack of collectible trading cards for individuals or groups of people during a live feed broadcast so everyone can see and share in the excitement of the event. This type of service is a cheaper way to potentially get high-dollar or rare cards without having to buy a whole box or case. Plus, their Breaker app lets you see exactly the status of the breaks that you may have bought into. To view live breaks, just check out their website. It's embedded about halfway down their homepage. They'll be breaking anywhere from 2 to 4 nights a week, depending on the amount of sold-out breaks that week. Check out more at www.premierboxbreaks.com, and we thank them for their support.
Eye for an Eye this week, Matt. Taken 3. Brian Mills, an ex-government operative, is accused of a ruthless murder he never committed or witnessed as he is tracked and pursued. Brian Mills brings out his particular set of skills to find the true killer and clear his name. The film stars Liam Neeson and Forrest Whitaker. The film is directed by Oliver Megaton, who directed Taken 2. Matt, interested or ignore on Taken 3?
Since I haven't seen the first two Takens, this guy's got to get stop getting stuff taken already. I'm glad that it's not a kidnapping movie, I guess, but ignore.
We throw it over to Ken. Interested or ignore on Taken 3?
Somewhat interested. What interests me is the fact that Liam Neeson, who's got to be 60 years old, is all of a sudden an action movie star.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And
he was Schindler, for God's sake.
He was Schindler. And now he was Oscar Schindler.
And now he's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And now he has a particular set of skills.
She's been taken. I just like the part in, it has to come up maybe in Taken 3, where finally he's like, oh shit, not again.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I'm getting too old for this.
Right, this is ridiculous. Right. I got to ignore this one. I did see Taken 1. I believe it was just entitled Taken. Miss Taken 2. And I doubt I'll go out and see Taken 3.
Yeah, they've taken it too far.
Well done, Matt.
Thank you.
Well done. Speaking of new movies, me and Matt got out and caught Into the Woods.
I wish.
You wish to have the curse reversed? Go to the wood and bring me back a cow as white as milk.
These beans carry magic.
The cape as red as blood.
Oh dear, how uneasy I feel.
The hair as yellow as corn. The slipper as pure as gold. Go to the wood!
Into the woods without delay, but careful not to lose the way. Up into the woods, who knows what may be lurking on the journey.
Good day, Mr. Wolf.
And what might be in your basket?
I must find that girl.
Into the woods, out of the woods, see what shall we get to bring to make the wind to go.
All will come to a happy end.
And only more dark.
Not always.
Into the Woods, I got to say this much about it. It is superbly acted. You got Meryl Streep, and some of she's surrounded by some of the best actors. The performances were fantastic. Emily Blunt. What didn't coalesce for me, I think, was the story. And I understand it's based on a play. This was something I did not know going into it. And I think I was there with my family. It was over the Christmas holiday. Maybe I was expecting a Disney fairy tale, kind of Frozen. There are some highlights here. One notable highlight for sure is the song, and this is a musical, bear in mind, full-blown musical. The song Agony with Chris Pine and the other Prince is got to be one of the funniest things I've seen going to the movies in the last 10 years, for sure. It's up there with any Mel Brooks production, and it was intentionally funny. And that is one of the few highlights because of the rest of the movie, while very beautiful, very well acted, doesn't coalesce well as a story. I was ultimately disappointed with Into the Woods. I would give it a mere 2.5 Jaws.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned that you were not familiar with the Broadway musical. Either
not
was
at all.
I.
No.
So you didn't know that this was sort of a mashup of the different Disney fairy tales.
I didn't. And here's the problem with that is this play came out back in the 80s. So I've learned from doing a little research after I watched the movie, they've been trying to get this to the big screen for a long, long time. And I think in the meantime, the past 30 years, all this deconstruction of fairy tales has happened already. So it was passé at this point. It's been done.
We've seen it done in Shrek and other films such as that.
This one reminded me a lot of Shrek. It's like Shrek if Shrek was on antidepressants.
Well, the one thing, too, because I was not familiar with this musical either. Yeah. But I liked the fairy tales because I sort of forgot about Jack and the Beanstalk. In fact, when he had the cow and he had to go into town, I wasn't even sure what fairy tale that was. I'm not unfamiliar. You know, Ryan, I don't have kids.
See, the little child in your heart is completely dead.
I got it after a while. I'm not saying I'm brain dead. You know, I just was unfamiliar with it.
You're just heart dead.
What did you think of Johnny Depp as the wolf?
Oh, Roker, Johnny Depp puts up one of the creepiest performances I've seen just about ever. He literally is licking his lips and singing a song called Hey Little Girl. And they use, so I come to find out in the play, they usually use an adult woman playing younger. But in the movie, it was a preteen, I don't know, she was maybe 14-year-old girl.
Okay.
And Johnny Depp is, I mean, he's singing that he's the big bad wolf, so ostensibly he wants to literally eat her.
Correct, yes.
But the lyrics are very suggestive, like super suggestive. I think they nailed that. It was, one of the scenes that I thought was done really well. A highlight.
And this is rated PG, I'm assuming?
This is
it
PG.
Is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, I thought a lot of the songs were pretty catchy, but some of them went on too long.
I would not use the word catchy.
No?
No.
Like when they all started singing, Into the Woods. That was good.
That's really probably the only exception. Even the one I brought up before, Agony, I wouldn't say it's catchy. There's no hook. There's no chorus. It's not like the new Let It Go. It's not. None of these songs are going to be on the radio. They're not going to even come close. They're not sing-alongs.
Also, Meryl Streep, as you mentioned, is in here. She looked like she was having fun, and I could almost feel that fun energy come off the screen. And that part of it I got into. When she had her big number, what a set of pipes on her. I didn't think she could sing nearly as well as she can. And two, like I say, I think watching her have fun made me like smile in the theater.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about that. Like, shouldn't an actor just be the character and not the actor having fun being the character?
I don't know.
I mean, I guess she's gotten to the point now where she's so freaking good, she can have fun while being good, and we can tell that she's having fun, yet still be utterly convincing as the character. That's just how good. I love the witch's entrances. Like, every time she came into a scene, she would pretty much tackle people, and that was cool.
And then lastly, too, I loved all the way up, what I would say as far as the arc of the story goes, I loved all the way up to when the Baker's couple, Emily Blunt, got the four items that they needed in their scavenger hunt. And then I felt like that ending part with the yeah, giant coming
yes,
down.
Yeah.
When I came down and I wrote all my thoughts down, and what I used was, it felt like somebody popped a balloon and all the air came out of the movie. It was just like it deflated and it went out on such a whimper. And
And
one of the things I love to do with this cinema hobby of ours is, after I've written my thoughts down in my review, I like to read other people's review. And lo and behold, I pick up Entertainment Weekly. And let me just read the last paragraph.
Oh, do tell.
Because they go on to say in Entertainment Weekly, the first two-thirds of the film, which are the Brother Grimm's greatest hits on laughing gas, have a fizzy, fairy dust energy. But as soon as the Baker couple's scavenger hunt is over and a rampaging giant appears, Into the Woods loses its magic and momentum and sags like an airless balloon. For a movie so hip to the conventions of fairy tales, it sure does not know when to cut to a happily ever after.
Right, but that's the thing, okay? So the play, it was intentional. That third act is supposed to be The moral of the story is, be careful what you wish for, which I think was very ambiguous and vague at best, but that was what it was intended to be. And the third act of the play is all about the character's destruction. They've gotten what they wanted at the end of Act 2, and then Act 3, everything falls apart. And I just think the execution in the film, like you said, it was completely uneven, and it lost momentum, it lost my interest, and it was way too long, by the way.
I thought so, too. It dragged on a little bit too long. You gave it 2.5 jaws.
Yeah.
I, for the production alone, and I liked a lot of the musical numbers, I'm giving it 3 jaws.
I think that's fair.
3 jaws, 2.5 jaws. That's about what Into the Woods is.
Agreed.
All right. There was one other big movie opening up. Angelina Jolie's big directing, her second film, Unbroken.
However dark the night, however dim our hopes.
Inbound 4 o'clock low.
The light will always follow darkness.
keep going the way you're going, you end up as a bum on the street. You train. You fight harder than those other guys, and you win. You can take it. You can make it. You can do this, Luke. You just gotta believe you can. Pop does. Ma does. I do.
Louis, a moment of pain is worth a lifetime of glory.
Matt, the true, amazing, and inspirational story of Louis Zamperini is brought to the big screen by director Angelina Jolie. The screenplay was adapted by the Coen brothers. It is based on the best-selling novel by Laura Hillenbrand, whose only other book was turned into the 2003 movie Seabiscuit. Zamperini's story is almost on a level that is unparalleled. He was a troubled youth, stealing small things around town, getting caught by police. However, as a teen, his brother started training him for track and field. He worked tremendously hard and was paid off as he made the men's track team in the 1936 Olympics. Getting to know young Louis' demeanor is vital to the story later when he must survive at sea and eventually in a Japanese prison of war camp. Having read the book, I can tell you this idea shined through there, but that is not the case with the film. Also, when Louis' bomber goes down in the Pacific, he must survive for over 40 days on a small inflatable raft. Again, the book conveys this enormous resilience it took to survive. But again, that is not the case with the film. By the time we get to the prisoner of war camp, I can tell this movie was just not going to be anywhere near as emotional as the book. Jolie failed to dig us in a little deeper, get us to know why Louis could not be broken. One of the joys of the book was intertwined with this remarkable story. Hillenbrand would pepper in amazing facts from the war. How many pounds of bombs were dropped in a particular day, or how many American prisoners were killed by the Japanese? How big and how heavy their airplane bombers were. Heck, their airplane is a character in the book, yet in the movie, that never comes through. When Gary Ross adapted Seabiscuit, he was able to include many of Hillenbrand's facts by voiceover. Now, I'm not sure that technique would have worked here, but the facts needed to be utilized, as that is what made the book so fascinating. I do want to highlight Jack O'Connell, who played Louis quite admirably, but his performance could not save the film from its blandness. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, a disappointing two Jaws.
That's a shame. I was kind of rooting for Jolie to have a hit here.
I loved the book, so I think that's why I'm saying it's a real shame. I think it was one of the better books I've read in the last, you know, two, three years, and I was looking forward to this one. Yeah. I remember mentioning when I heard that Angelina Jolie was directing it, I was nervous. Oh, man, I wanted this in the hands of, like, Spielberg or somebody big like that.
See, but are you a little biased there going in because you like the book and you don't trust Jolie?
Maybe I am, but I gave her the benefit of the doubt. I mean, I chose to see this movie first, out of all the movies that were opening up over Christmas, I could have went and saw Into the Woods. I could have went and saw various other films. I was I put it aside as I want to see Unbroken.
What a weak Christmas movie weekend we
had. I agree.
It was really weak. Probably the weakest in the past, I would say, like 10 years.
Some local controversy regarding Unbroken. Wayne Messmer, who I'm sure you're both familiar with, posted on Facebook that Angelina Jolie should be repeatedly punched in the face, much like the character in Unbroken.
Right.
And he was called to task on that by Dean Richards of WGN.
Wow. Really?
Yes. For which Wayne posted another Facebook post in which he apologized for his use of words.
Wow.
Extensively apologized.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. I'm going to have to catch up on this controversy. I was unaware.
Dean Richards gets involved. Look out.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly.
And there is a scene in this movie, and it was in the book as well, where all the other prisoners that Louis Zamperini was in this camp with, the Japanese made every other prisoner come up there and slug him in the face because they knew he was this Olympic runner, and they were just trying to put him down to just sort of demoralize the entire camp. And it's heartbreaking, and he's got to get up and stand there and just get punched and punched and punched. What a story. But I know what he was saying is I think people who read the book are going to be thoroughly disappointed with the way the film came out. I would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, far be it for me to argue with Dean Richards, but you know, if we could talk about that maybe off the air. I don't know. I think people have the right to express their opinion. If she let him down, well, whatever. Maybe he was a little too strong there.
I mean, it was obvious that when Wayne Messmer, and he said so much in his apology, that he still was feeling the raw emotion from viewing this in the film, being as familiar with the book as he was still angry over the depiction that he saw in the film when he wrote the post on Facebook.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he said, so maybe I used maybe a bit too strong of words there, but he was so upset at what he had seen, knowing the book so well.
Sure. Well, wow. Jawheads, if you saw Into the Woods or you saw Unbroken and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. Let us know what you guys thought of the films. We'll retweet it. We'll get the discussion going. So, Matt, like we said, we're sitting in 2015.
Yeah.
It's the year Marty McFly came to in the future. I can't believe that I watched a movie about them traveling to the future, and now we're in that future year. It's pretty crazy.
I know. We're in the future now. So what did they get right?
Well, I always thought they got a lot wrong. I would say the thing they got right the most was when Marty McFly goes into his house, and they have like 100 and some stations, which at the time seemed
ludicrous.
Yeah, it seemed like, oh yeah, like in the future we're really going to have 250 some stations.
And when Flea calls him on the TV, totally have that. It even like did the little screen in screen thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have that at Skype.
That's true.
You can even do it on your, you know, living room television if you wish.
But I don't see the automatic blow dry jacket. He gets wet and all of a sudden the jacket just dries himself.
Or the
haven't seen that.
Self tying shoelaces, not so much.
No.
As we mentioned, flying cars.
No flying
cars.
But
we do have holograms, convincing holograms. While they're not used for advertising like they were in Back to the Future, they're used at concerts and performances.
At Coachella.
Yeah. Tupac.
I would actually say the depiction of the future was a bit far fetched, and it was supposed to be.
Yeah, well, the Cubs did win at that point, and we have not gotten to that.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're saying the Cubs won in the movie.
In the film, right, yes. Not in reality, Ryan. Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, but the cover of the Sports Almanac, I believe, or it's not on the cover, but he opens it up. He's like, the Cubs have won. Isn't that...
It's Back to the Future. He sees it on the screen. Cubs win World Series, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when he gets the idea to buy the Sports Almanac.
I mean, at least they got that right. They were kind of right in the sense that we're still talking about the Cubs not winning. You know, here we are in 2015.
True. So we are covering it since we are in 2015. Our top five favorite future depictions in cinema. Al Roker Jr. is getting us started this week. What do you got sitting at number five there?
This was a very tough list for me, which will become painfully obvious when I mention number five. Because number five, I did mention Back to the Future Part Two, but not because of the holograms. And not because of the hoverboards and the rehydrating microwaves and things of that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, in that nature. But simply because the Cubs were supposed to win the World Series in 2015, twofold, they had the foresight to realize that what year did Back to the Future 2 come out?
Must
maybe
have been
89, maybe?
Throw it in the jaw box. He'll look it up in the break, our engineer, Elias. But I you're right. It's late 80s.
I think it was 89, yeah.
I mean, they had the wherewithal to realize that 25 years later, the Cubs would have still not won the World Series.
That's right. What I'm saying,
and it would still be news in 2015. And I believe they won in 9 games versus Florida.
Right. I think you're right.
You know, and at the time, Florida did not have a baseball team.
Right. It didn't exist.
So they got that right as well.
Wow. Good. Yeah, that's a great detail.
And you could take that even one step further. You know, well, they were now the Miami Marlins, but they were the Florida Marlins. So that's why I picked Back to the Future for that, getting that so right.
Nice.
So long ago.
Well, I like that you have that pick. And because of that, because you're a sports guy, you know what I mean? So it fits. Yeah,
very good.
And I've never asked you, are you a Cubs guy or a Sox guy?
I am both. Here we go.
It's bisexual.
No, I'll quickly tell you the story, and that is the reaction that I get from everyone. But growing up, my mother was a Chicago public school teacher, and so she would get at the time the Sox would have perfect attendance and straight A student tickets.
Oh, how nice of the White Sox.
That they would hand out to...
What a great organization.
They would give to students. Mm-hmm.
That's how they filled the stadium.
No. Well, apparently, Chicago Public Schools didn't have a lot of perfect attendance or straight-A students because my mother would have a ton of these tickets every year to give me.
So wait, so you didn't earn them.
I did not earn them. Okay, I went to a Montessori school. I didn't go to public school.
Okay.
So I would go to all these Sox games when I was a kid. And I live in Hyde Park, so not far from Sox Park. So I'd go to all these games on my mother's straight-A perfect attendance teacher tickets. Meanwhile, you know, I'm getting up in the morning. I'm watching Ray Rayner. I'm seeing Bozo Circus, things of that nature. I get home from school. You know, there's only 257, 911, 26, 32, 44. Those are television channels for you youngins out there. And so the TV's on channel 9 from being on for Bozo Circus and Ray Rayner in a day. You come home, turn the TV on, and the Cubs game is on.
Right.
So I became a Cubs fan for the Cubs games being on every day once I got home from school. I was a Sox fan from going to Sox games all those years. As a kid, for many, many years, I had been to many more Sox games than I had Cubs games. I really didn't start to make that up until I became an adult.
Wow. Roker, if you have the proverbial gun to your head, you've got to make a call. You've got to decide.
Let's go.
Nobody lets you get away with that, do they? I mean, seriously.
Most people go, okay, I understand at least.
I mean, that was a good story and everything. But who do you like?
I get it.
Who do you like?
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
I mean, if I had to.
Yes. You want the truth?
You can't handle the truth. You understand, I've grown up on the South Side. I've had a gun to my head. And they weren't asking me, who do you like best, the Cubs or the Sox?
Tell me the truth. Who do you like?
I've got an answer for that, too. If you put a gun to my head, I'd have to say the Cubs.
Yes.
I was there.
I was
Comiskey
the
Park
bell, but...
when they clinched the division in 83. I was there when they clinched the division in 93. I was there for the first playoff game in 93 where Jordan threw out the first pitch and then the buzz started circling the stadium that
what a horrible
he was
day.
Retiring.
Yeah, remember
and
that
And by
like
the fifth
yesterday.
Inning, nobody cared about the game anymore. I was there for Mark Burley's perfect game.
Woo!
So I've been at Sox Park for many more momentous occasions than for Cubs games. I was at the Bartman game at Wrigley.
That's a great Sox game, too.
Yeah, that's your that's probably your favorite Cubs game.
Oh
Sox
man,
fan.
That was a great one. Yeah. Great day. That was awesome. All right, we'll let him slide as being a fan of both.
No, he said the Cubs.
No, I missed that part.
He said the Cubs.
Edit that part out, Matt.
No, I won't.
All right, what swings us over to my number five? Sorry to bore all the jawheads who are in Chicago baseball, but you got to understand it's in Chicago. It's a very big part of the culture. If you're a Sox fan, Cubs fan,
I understand that. But yeah. I have a philosophy on that, and that is that Sox fans don't hate the Cubs. Sox fans hate Cub fans,
and I get that too.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Cubs fans don't hate.
As a Sox fan, you couldn't care less what happens to the Cubs. What happens to the Cubs doesn't mean anything in your life. It doesn't matter. You don't like Cub fans,
right? All those goofs and the bleachers.
There's a difference.
Oh, hate them. Good point.
Yeah.
All right. Swings us over to my number five. Off the baseball.
Right.
And I got a 2005 Michael Bay movie. And you know, Matt, I'm not a huge fan of Michael Bay.
Is the movie still going on right now? Is the movie finished yet?
I am speaking of The Island.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, you probably have heard of this one. This has got Ewan McGregor and Scarlett Johansson.
Sure.
And what was cool about this one is they were clones. But you don't know why they're clones, but you come to find out that they're actually clones so that they're actual counterparts in the real world in case you got your arm severed.
They're backup copies.
Right. You would have your backup arm from your clone.
Okay.
And eventually they do break out. I did a little research, and I actually wrote down all the future years. So what year that was supposed to take place.
Oh, nice.
The movie came out in 2005. It was depicting the year 2019.
See, they got to put these a little further out.
I agree. You know. We're not going to have our counterpart clones in 2019.
No.
No. All right. That was my number five, The Island. It's a Michael Bay movie I actually would recommend checking out.
Wow. Matt? You don't say that too often.
You're not kidding.
Okay.
Matt, what do you got sitting at number five?
At number five. Wait, really only number five? Fifth Element. Speaking of number five. It's not completely optimistic, but it's not dystopia either. There's problems in the future society depicted in that film, just like there are in today's society. It's definitely not dystopia. People have work. It's not an overly oppressive government. And it's Bruce Willis. And if it's not the debut...
Mila Jovovich.
If it wasn't her debut, it was certainly the first film that made me aware of her. And
throw it in the jaw box. See if that was her debut,
she's
Elias.
Practically just wearing Band-Aids in parts of this. And honest to God, maybe it was because she's hot. But I really liked her performance in this movie a lot, and I was expecting more from her, and unfortunately, we just got a slew of Resident Evil movies that were largely disappointing. But anyway, I like The Fifth Element, yeah. And it's something I rewatch every once in a while.
It might come up on my list later, too.
Oh, okay.
All right. Swinging into our fours, what do you got sitting there, Al? Roper Jr.?
At number four, I put Blade Runner at number four.
Nice.
The first realistic depiction of the future in my mind. You know, yes, flying cars, video billboards, you know, replicants, but still very dirty and grimy,
yep,
and ugly, and not the pretty scrubbed up stainless steel version of the future that we're used to getting in the movies. And I can remember just even as a kid watching this movie going, now, see, that is how I can imagine the future being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can see the future being like this. It was the future, but yet it was like Chinatown from 48 Hours.
Right.
It was just dark and damp and just very realistic for me.
I agree. And it's actually beautiful in its own way. Like, it is dark and gritty and dirty, but yet still beautiful. There's amazing cinematography in the movie. Like, when it opens up just beautiful and the music's playing, it's like you get the feeling that it's this magical place, the future, and yet you can still relate to it too.
That it's the city. It's
right.
Still.
Yep. The yeah. grind of the everyday city.
Yeah,
I loved
right.
it. Yeah. Nice. Nice pick at number four. Swings it over to mine. I went with a comedy, a Woody Allen comedy, Matt.
Oh, wow.
I've spoken about it before years ago. Sleeper. And this is where Woody Allen falls asleep for 200 years and he wakes up in the future. And I love, and this movie came out in 1973. So I love the 70s depiction of, say, what it was going to be like in 2173. It has a very 70s look to the future, if you know what I mean. Buildings.
So what year is it that he goes to?
He goes to 2173.
Okay.
And there's a lot of, obviously, a very funny comedy. You know, the doctors in the future are telling him, like, can you believe, you know, he's suffering from this because way back then they thought smoking was no good for you. There's all this, like, weird humor.
Yeah.
But for sure the best part of it is the orgasmatron, which is a device that you can get into and you just lay into it and you have orgasms. And, of course, Woody Allen's character, not knowing this, thinks he's hiding in a closet and he's just over-pleasuring himself. And then... a little while later, he's acting as a robot, and there's basically like this orb, which is sort of the same thing. You just hold on to the orb or basically barely touch it, and you can have an orgasm. But they think he's a robot, so they just put it down in his hands, which is too overwhelming for him. And he's carrying it, and he's got that. You can imagine the physical comedy. Yeah. His face, it's just hysterical.
One of the few, if not the only, sci-fi movies from Woody Allen.
I agree, yeah. And Diane Keaton also appears in there.
Yeah.
It's an oldie, but a goodie.
I haven't seen it in, geez, I don't know how many years. But
Sleeper, Jawheads. If you still need to catch up on your Woody Allens, that is a must. Matt, what do you got sitting number four?
Starship Troopers. I remember when my brother showed me this movie. He's like, just watch this. And I think it had equal parts of, pick your favorite war movie. And certainly a lot of comedy. And there's, you know, some great nudity in the film, too. Great action. And it was kind of fun, right? I mean, it was just like a really fun movie where they have to go up against these, you know, these bug creatures. And it's always great to see Neil Patrick Harris in anything. So.
It's a glorified B movie, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's what they were going for.
Yeah, they were going for that. And it sort of succeeded at that. I saw it years later where I lost the hype. And some people love this film. You know, I remember I had a roommate like in college that was like obsessed with it. Oh, it's so great. And he'd watch it all the time.
I think it is great.
It's okay. I didn't have that much fun with it.
Well, what do you think, Roker? Save me.
Well, I'll say this about Neil Patrick Harris. I got an opportunity to interview him a couple of years ago. And I remember very specifically he was on, remember the old game show Hollywood Squares?
Sure.
Of course. And this was one of the more recent versions with Tom Bergeron as the host. And Neil Patrick Harris is on the panel, and the guy goes, I'll take Doogie to block, right? Doogie Howser. And I remember sitting there in my living room going, this poor guy, he's never going to get out of being typecast as Doogie Howser. And now he's the king of the world.
Yep.
He's going to be hosting the Oscars.
He's going to be hosting the Oscars. Yeah. He's the king of the world. He is the king of gays. He is the king of actors. He is everything to everybody. And so I just couldn't be. And that was kind of the beginning of him coming out of that.
Nice.
Doogie trap.
Sure.
Was Starship Troopers.
I don't know. Was that the beginning of it? I think it might have been Harold and Kumar.
Well, I think Harold and Kumar really was after them that. Open. Yeah, really cracked them open for sure.
Yeah, way after. Yeah,
yeah, that was after. But yeah, I think that was the one. That was the one yeah. where absolutely. But
sure, maybe that was the first one that like where he could finally see the light at the end of the Doogie.
Right. At the end of the Doogie Tunnel. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
All right. Nice pick. What do you got sitting at number three? We are into our threes.
Number three, and I'm not sure if this is actually a movie in the future. I believe it is, but I'm going with the Condemned with Stone Cold Steve Austin. In a pay-per-view game where convicts fight for their life and the last man standing gets their freedom. And I had predicted, and if you want to put it in the same If you want to put it in the same vein as Running Man,
yeah,
the Schwarzenegger movie. I mean, I predicted 20 years ago on the air that one day we would see executions on pay-per-view. And these movies to me were sort of depictions of that.
Mm-hmm.
More so The Condemned than The Running Man, because The Condemned, they didn't know they were on pay-per-view. And then they just dropped them in, cameras everywhere. And they're fighting for their lives, and you can imagine how it ends. I don't know if you're, quick to run out to see the latest Stone Cold Steve Austin movie when it came out. I don't want to give away the ending.
Please don't.
I don't.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Okay, I don't want to give away the ending. But so The Condemned was Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I'll just put it on my cue.
Just trying
does
to.
He,
just
does
trying
he chug to, a beer in this?
He yes, exactly right. Yes. He gets up, he finds an old wrestling ring, and he gets up and he slams two beers together and drinks them.
Nice. Swings it over to my number three. And at number three, I have a Tom Cruise vehicle. He's been in a future movie quite a few times.
Yes.
But this one, I think the look of the film and the way it's depicted, I really liked. I'm speaking of Minority Report.
Kind of dystopian, Rye.
It is a little bit dystopian, but not quite. And really, I was going for the depiction of, I loved the cars that actually went up the sides of buildings. So the roads and the buildings of the city now were just intertwined. So that the cars weren't necessarily just driving down the streets. It might go straight up to a building, and then it went up the side of the building. And there's a scene there where he's jumping up, on the sides of the cars, and then he gets inside it. I just thought that was a whole interesting take that we've never seen. We've seen the flying car so many times and different, type of weird vehicles, but we never saw cars actually attached to buildings, and that was a weird concept.
The big bit of technology everybody wants to see from that is the way they manipulate the computers with their hands.
That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fantastic. And I remember just going, that was cool. And then I realized, you've got that swipe technology now and touchscreen technology. Yeah, we are getting there.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, that was really cool.
And to give you an idea, that movie was depicting the future year. Minority Report was depicting 2054 in that movie.
Nice.
Matt, what do you got sitting at number three?
At number three, I have a Robin Williams film. Very optimistic. I think it's based on I want to say it's Kurt Vonnegut, short story, Bicentennial Man. Throw it in the jaw box. Bicentennial Man short story. I think it was Vonnegut. Doesn't matter. Robin Williams is an android, and he's basically you know, he gets bought by this family who comes to find out that he is truly alive in ways that the other androids are not. And it's called Bicentennial Man because it's this 200-year journey of him seeking to be truly human. It's sort of a Pinocchio tale. But, you know, he finds himself and he changes the world. And it was just a really great movie. And, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, the short story may not have been called Bicentennial Man. It might have been The Man with the Positronic Brain, I believe, is the original name of the short story.
Even better.
Yeah, but it's kind of hopeful, you know, and it's a love story of sorts. And it's rare that the future is depicted with optimism. And, you know, I think Robin Williams was the perfect character or the perfect actor for this character because of the optimism that he brought to a role. So I really like it.
I'll throw it on my cue.
It's a tearjerker.
All right. We're into our twos. Roker, what do you got sitting there?
Number two, I have the Star Trek movies, but not for what you're thinking. Not because of the, you know, the video screens and the teleporting and what essentially were flip phones. I was just happy to see that there were black people in the future.
Well done.
That is my, well done. I mean, that you want to talk about
even a if top, it's LeVar Burton.
You want to talk about a top depiction of the future. Yes. You know, LeVar Burton, Whoopi Goldberg, Nichelle Nichols, I'll take whatever I can get. There are black people in the future.
When you saw that, was it a sigh of relief? Oh, thank you.
It is a sign of relief, exactly. Because if you think about it, it's usually not depicted in the future. I mean, if we think about a lot of the movies that we've mentioned here today, I don't think there are a lot of brothers in Logan's Run. I'm not sure.
Too good.
Yes, you know, and here's the thing, and Star Trek is also at number two for me, so okay. We might as well just discuss this.
Sure.
It broke a lot of barriers in its day. It really pushed this whole idea of not just, you know, racial harmony of human beings, but the entire universe, like harmony and peace. I mean, it wasn't Star Wars, it was Star Trek. They were explorers. It was very optimistic in the sense that we could go out there and you know, spread the human race and the whole humanity has come together. War is at an end. And, of course, there were conflicts. Otherwise, it would be boring as hell. But ultimately, it was, I think, a really good message for people.
Although, in The Wrath of Khan, the first person to die was a black guy. Paul Warfield, they put the thing in his ear.
Oh, he was the one that got the thing in his ear.
Yeah, he got the thing in his ear. So I'm like, even in the future, the black guy is the first one to die in the movies. But also featuring a very hot Kirstie Alley in her first role.
Right.
Yeah. She was a looker back in the day.
Yeah, Lieutenant Savick. Now you can't miss her.
Right. Yeah.
Big as a house.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Nice pick at number two. My number two, this is where I had The Fifth Element.
Okay.
And I will sub one in really quick, but I did want to say on The Fifth Element that the year it is depicting, I wasn't sure on this, 2263,
yeah,
The Fifth
way
Element,
out
way into the future with the flying cabs. And of course, Bruce Willis is driving a taxi, but also the bright colors, the look of the film is just beautiful.
Yeah, great art direction.
I that was one of the first films I bought on Blu-ray, and oh, it just jumps out on the TV screen. Love it. I substitute 2004's Looper in there.
Also kind of dystopian, Rye. Breaking your own rules here.
I know. But it was a fun look at the future because it incorporated a lot of like what we had talked about where Blade Runner. It was sort of gritty. It wasn't all super nice, you know. And that was depicting the year 2044. So not too far out there.
Okay.
All right.
Where are we?
Well, you had what at number two?
At number two, I had Star Trek.
All right, so we have cleared our twos. We've cleared our twos. We're into our number one future depiction. Roker, hit me.
Oh, the pressure is on. Number one future depiction for me, Escape from New York.
Nice. I love that pick.
Manhattan is sealed off and turned into a maximum security prison. It is 1997.
Wow, back way out in the future.
1997.
That is crazy.
Kurt Russell, Isaac Hayes, Harry Dean Stanton. Adrian Barbeau, Ernest Borgnine. Mm-hmm. The president gets kidnapped, and they have to send Snake Plissken to get the president out of what is now the maximum security prison that is the island of Manhattan. I loved that idea then, and I love it now. Close it off and just turn it into a prison. I don't care if it's Manhattan, Key West, whatever. Just seal it off and toss them all in there. I loved it.
It's an absolute classic B movie, and it definitely started Kurt Russell's career.
Well, yes and no. I mean, Kurt Russell was in a whole bunch of Disney movies when he was a kid.
Yeah, that's true. He did have some stuff before that, but by and large, I think like we all became super aware of him from that movie. Yeah,
that's true. That is true. That's true.
That and Overboard.
Great pick. Great pick. Hey, what about Big Trouble in Little China?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was joking with Overboard. Right. It was a joke.
Nice pick at number one there, Roker. My number one, following it up here, a strong... stars Ethan Hawke, Uma Thurman, and Jude Law. I've spoken about this movie before. It is Gattaca.
Nice.
And I love it. In this film, they're altering genetics, which I think we're actually getting pretty close to this idea. And in the film, they want to obviously get the most perfect humans out there, because the whole movie, it seems like the whole world is and industry is space exploration. We've gotten to the point where we're sending people off all over the solar system and so forth, and so they want to have the most perfectly genetic people so that you're not prone to getting some type of odd disease or something wrong with you during your space travel. And of course, Ethan Hawke was not genetically
perfect. Right.
So he's stealing Jude Law's identity. So you have this like thriller film because it's his dream to go into space one day. If you haven't seen Gattaca, I can't tell you how great it is. And the thing is too that I love is the depiction of the future. They go with like this classic look. This is actually, they don't even give you a year. They say it's mid to late 21st century, and it has just like a look where nothing would ever age it. I think if we went back and we watched it say 50 years from now, we'd all say, oh, it's still the future. It has a feel of the future, but you can't, you know, there's no odd gadgets or anything. Hmm. And I thought that was an interesting take on it.
Subtle. It was subtle. Right. Yeah.
Very, very. My number one, Gattaca. Nice. Matt, we left the last number one to you.
All right, you guys. I think you're missing a big one here. It just came out in 2013. Spike Jonze, Her.
I was going to put it on my list. Well done, Matthew.
Yeah, and I think of all the movies we've talked about, Her has probably the most potential for coming true. And maybe even not that far in the future. I mean, it could really, I mean, shit, the next iPhone Siri update could be Her. We don't know. This is most definitely Joaquin Phoenix's best role to date.
Well, I don't know if you'd go that far.
Really?
Yeah, I love him in Walk the Line.
Yeah, okay. He was great as Johnny Cash, but I don't know. I think the vulnerability he had in Her, And I also really like Scarlett Johansson, even though it was just a voiceover. So, tremendous acting in the movie. The gadgets in the film were, again, I think they were pretty subtle for the most part. There was that one like video game, and of course the main construct of the movie is around this phone like device that he keeps in his pocket, which is the OS. But again, I don't think that's so far fetched. I mean, nothing in the movie was, there were no flying cars, I don't think. Nothing in the movie was really bizarre. The way they dressed was like subtly different, and the gadgets they used were a little bit more advanced, but nothing crazy.
Right. And I love the social messages that the movie was put forth. I mean, we're using technology now to communicate in between each other more than we ever have in the existence of humanity.
Yeah.
It's through phone and text, and how much different that is changing relationships when you start dating. And then secondly, the ability of all this technology, how it's making us, if you're single, more comfortable being single. Where I think if you went back, you know, 30, 40 years ago, and you were a single guy, you had even more pressure to find someone and date and get married and live with.
Because now we have porn.
Right. Well, everything's accessible, right? It seems like everything's made for someone to make such a comfortable life.
Yeah.
Where all of a sudden you could be single and just be a consumer of all this technology and get by.
Yeah.
And you're still communicating with other people, and you're not so separated where, you know, 35 years ago when you were a single person, you weren't sitting at home texting your buddies during, you know, a football game. Yeah. You were just sitting there by yourself.
That's true. I didn't even think about that aspect.
And so I don't know. I love that movie. I was going to put it on my list, but I thought, we just talked about her. You know, it's sort of a recent film. But
it is a recent film.
I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, I think it's worthy on this list. So
nice. That was our top five favorite future depictions. Jawheads, if we missed your favorite and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going. What we're going to do is take a quick break. And when we come back, me and Matt are having a cinema war on what is the most anticipated movie of 2015. Plus a look back at 2014 in sequels, Matt vs. Roker in 2014 sequel movie trivia.
Sequels and remakes.
We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
CinemaJaw is brought to you by MyCommunity.com. Join an amazing social network with 100,000 new members daily. MyComms is all about improving communities socially. Check it out at mycommunity.com. That's MyComunity.com. And by, hey, Rye, have you heard about the indie author Kyla Kiker?
No.
She has 5 highly reviewed novels published this year in 3 different genres, and she's looking to break an indie author sales record. She's inspiring people across the world that dreams do come true, Ryan.
Wow.
A popular blogger and a social media favorite, Kiker draws thousands to her website and daily blog posts where you can read excerpts from her books and where she motivates readers to push forward on their own personal journeys, no matter what. A love of attraction devotee, she believes no matter where you are from, no matter how much or how little money you have, and no matter what choices you've made in your past, you can still make all your dreams come true. Find out more, Ryan, I know you're interested, at penamek.blogspot.com. That's penamek.blogspot.com.
To get ourselves a treat.
And we are back on CinemaJaw, hanging out with Al Roker Jr.
Hello.
Al, we had mentioned before to the Jawheads, but let's remind them, if the Jawheads want to find out where Al Roker Jr. is headed next in Chicagoland radio, and also just to follow along with some of your humorous tweets, the best place to do so online.
On Twitter, at Al Roker Jr., A-L-R-O-K-E-R-J-R. One Direction just started following me last week.
Really?
Yeah, that was just out of the blue. I don't understand why. Of course,
is it the real One Direction?
The real One Direction, yes.
Wow.
I don't know why, but you can go to alrokerjr.com and also my Al Roker Jr. Facebook page as well.
Do it, Jawheads. Do it. Matt, before we get to trivia, before we get to Cinema War, we threw a few items into the Jaw Box, and I'm sure Elias wants to wish us a Happy New Year. Heck, I didn't think Elias would be here come 2015. Let's open up that Jaw Box.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box! What's in the box?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Yes, Happy New Year's to all. Here, let me adjust my level here. And Matt, I have to say, in 2015, when the Cubs are in the World Series, please let me out of the Jaw Box for like a couple weeks.
You know what, dude? I will. I promise you that, okay?
Thank you. You guys got that. That's on
Surrounded
tape.
By Cubs fans, I am.
I'm going to tell everyone that you're Bartman.
Well, and that's,
I found him, guys.
Oh, no.
That's why I've been in hiding, exactly. No, I mean, and Ryan might be there with us because it might be Cubs versus White Sox World Series.
Hey,
so.
Sox had a good offseason. Yeah. I like it.
And that's a thing. So he might be busy. He might not be able to feed me that week. So.
I have said, this is my quote, if the Cubs are in the World Series, this city will burn. If the Cubs and the Sox are in this World Series together, the city will crumble.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It will. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, Mrs. O'Leary's cow ain't got nothing.
Yeah, that's right.
That. Let's see. The year Back to the Future 2 was released, 1989.
89.
Wow, nailed it.
Nailed it.
Roker.
Yeah, well done.
Mila Jovovich did not debut in The Fifth Element. Matt, you were way off. Let's see, her first major, she was in an episode of Married with Children, by the way, which is interesting.
No kidding, wow.
But I believe her first major film role was Return to the Blue Lagoon. Replacing
you're using the word major quite lightly there.
No, but then she was also in Chaplin and Dazed and Confused.
Huh, no kidding, all right.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. All right, let's see, Bicentennial Man, the short story. So,
Philip K. Dick, right?
No, that's a good guess. It was, so here's the lineage here. It was the Positronic Man, And that was a novel in 1992 that was co-written by Isaac Asimov and Robert Silverberg, based on Asimov's novella, The Bicentennial Man.
Okay, so it was an Asimov story. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And that's all.
That was all we threw in there?
Yep.
All right.
It was the hoverboard reel, but Matt, he filled us in. Yeah.
Well, happy New Year, Elias.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
For the record, the hoverboard is real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
This is a fact. It's on Kickstarter.
But it looks really lame.
Does it hover?
Oh, come on. Yes or no?
Does it hover?
Barely.
Barely. It holds a human being. Anyway. Is it a board? It's a hoverboard.
All right. Elias is looking very forward to another year in the job box. Yeah. So get back in there.
Thank you, guys.
Matt, it brings us to a segment called
Cinema War.
Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt bet on a topic each week. And our guest this week, Al Roker Jr., gets to play judge and jury and tell the Jawheads who he thinks won this argument. It's important because we're fighting for 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. Two big, big, big movies coming out in 2015.
Huge.
Heck, Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic, which 2015 blockbuster are you more excited for? Avengers Age of Ultron or Star Wars Episode 7? Matt, you'll be fighting for the Avengers. Rye, you'll be fighting for Star Wars. Let the Cinema War begin.
So that earns me 20 seconds of precious jaw time to... Oh, wait. I forgot. I even have to argue this? Let me get this straight. Come on, Matt. You think an Avengers film, which we have had anywhere of 1 to 3 a year lately, is going to be more anticipated than Star Wars Episode 7? Who are you, Nick Fury? 2015 is about the Force, my friend. No and if buts about it.
Ryan, this may be one of the highest hills I've ever had to climb in a cinema war, but I believe that my passion and the facts will prevail. But before I begin, I just want to congratulate Roker on how handsome he looks this evening.
Oh, see, nice.
Seriously, Ken, how are you so amazing, sir? All that being said, it's got to be that stupid lightsaber that does in the Star Wars movie for me. Seriously, who needs a hilt on a lightsaber? If that's the kind of dumbass crap that's going to be fausted on us this time around, I'd rather smell the Hulk's feet.
Oh, please. There is so much more to be excited about with Episode 7. First off, there is the bad taste of the prequels that everyone wants to cleanse away. Not to mention Luke, Han, Leia are back for the first time in over 30 years. Not to mention, the man himself, J.J. Abrams, is directing. Fanboys may pass out before screenings. It will be the movie event of the year, bar none.
The Avengers came out of nowhere and became a media and marketing juggernaut. Meanwhile, the Star Wars has been around since the 70s. Sure, all the pimple-faced boys that jerked off to Slave Leia back then will be back as pimple-faced adults hoping to see the 65-year-old Carrie Fisher in the chainmail bikini again, but frankly, that is sadder than Mark Hamill's career.
Ooh. Matt, I know you love the first Avengers film. I've heard it time and time again here on Cinema Jaw, but let's be serious. None of the Avenger films, when they're all together...
There's only one, by the way.
No, when they're all together or separated... is held in the same regard as the Star Wars movies. Avenger films may be big blockbusters, but Star Wars is a global event. Hell, I have seen a petition online to have Episode 7's release date of December 18th turned into a national holiday, and I signed that petition.
Oh, man. All right, Ryan, did you fall and bump your head like the geriatric Han Solo on your way in from the parking lot? Star Wars is what it was. Three amazing films. We're all trying to forget Jar Jar Lucas's prequels that sucked so bad we spent 9 years trying to defend them only to realize we couldn't. Virgin births and midichlorians, they ruined Star Wars. How much of a glutton for punishment are you? Marvel, on the other hand, has yet to let us down and even made a believer out of you, Rye the Movie Guy, with hit after hit after hit. My money is on the sure thing here.
Yeah, but the other knock against the Avenger movie here, Matt, is there are just too many damn superhero films coming out these days. Their market is watered down. Star Wars is a series like no other. When I heard that J.J. Abrams was getting back to the vibe of the original series, I was hooked. Minimal CGI, actual sets, the return of the Millennium Falcon, classic characters and new faces take me away to that galaxy far, far away.
It comes back to this. Star Wars happened and the Avengers is happening. The end. If I want another romp around in a galaxy far, far away, I'll put on The Guardians. I don't want to hear how Yoda's ghost explains Carrie Fisher's plastic surgery and see Luke change his name from Skywalker to Where's My Walker. I do, however, want to see good actors like Robert Downey Jr., Scarlett Johansson, Mark Ruffalo mix it up with the likes of James Spader in what is sure to be the mega hit action-packed thriller of the summer. Make mine Avengers Hulk smash.
Wow. Wow. Buttonheads, as we always do here, yeah. Matt. He brought his A game. I got the force behind me. We throw it over to our guest, our judge, our jury. Roker, what'd you think of this cinema war?
Well, when is the Avengers coming out? In the summer?
Yeah, in the summer.
December for Star Wars.
Okay, well, first of all, Matt, in this day and age, true blockbusters come out in the summer.
True.
They don't come out at Christmas. They come out in the summer. So in that sense, the new Avengers movie is a true modern age blockbuster. The Star Wars movies of the past of the past 20 years have been so bad they have killed me on the Star Wars franchise, almost to the point where I don't care anymore. But if you are a child of the 70s and 80s from the original three Star Wars movies, it is something that you are looking forward to, maybe not so much as a return of the original characters, but hoping that finally they've gotten it right after all these years. So I think it's almost going to be, depending on what age group you're talking about. If you're younger, you weren't alive for 4, 5, and 6. You mm-hmm. weren't alive in 77, 80, and 83. You were alive for those shitty Star Wars movies
right.
that came out in the 90s and the 2000s, and you may not be as hyped to see this new Star Wars movie. You are hyped on the new Marvel movies. You're hyped on the Avengers. You want to see that. If you are a little bit older, you definitely are going to want to see the new Star Wars movie, but I'm sorry, Matt. Rye is right.
Yes. Yes.
Star Wars is more than just a movie. It's more than just a movie franchise. It is something in and of itself that is completely goes beyond movies, beyond pop culture, beyond anything at this point. So the more anticipated movie of 2015 has to be the new Star Wars movie.
I for the record, I agree with you. Everything everything you just said is completely correct.
It was a really good assessment of the cinema war, I thought.
Yeah, I had to choose a side, and I chose the Avengers, but how can you argue against Star Wars?
You just can't.
I'm literally flying across the country to New York so I can watch Star Wars with my friend who I grew up with.
Wow.
I'm going to be camping out with my kid. We're bringing our lightsabers, and I love the Avengers. Love the Avengers. But I'm not going to fly across the country to see the Avengers.
Right. Exactly.
Well, that earns me 20 seconds of precious jaw time. And I actually told this fellow who I know listens to Cinema Jaw every single week, our good friend Charles Klein. I saw him yesterday. He was nice enough to call me with an extra ticket to the Music Box to see 2001 A Space Odyssey on the big screen. I had never seen it on the big screen, and I went over there and checked it out. And it hit me. I hadn't probably seen the film start to finish in about 10 years. And what a marvel it is. I absolutely love it. And I remember when I was a kid in high school, I read Catcher in the Rye, and I said to myself, I'm going to read this book every 10 years of my life and see how I perceive the book different as I get older. And I've read it now 3 times, and it's interesting how it always changes. And I am going to do that with 2001 A Space Odyssey, and I encourage all the Jawheads to do the same. I think I probably saw it about 10 years ago, and it's so amazing what a different effect it had on me this last time watching it. Maybe I was a little bit more immersed because it was in the theater and it was so cool seeing it on the big screen, but it really affected me a lot more than it did even just 10 years ago. So
it's awesome.
That's my rant.
Well, a good use of your time, right?
Thank you. Thank you. And thanks to Charles Klein again. All right. It brings us to trivia. We look back at 2014. Like you said, sequels, franchises, that's all there were.
Sequels and remakes.
So what we are playing is 2014 sequel movie trivia. Roker, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals if the person doesn't know it. And if you get stuck on a question, you get one trip to the ER. Elias Rodriguez has clues to all the questions.
I will go second.
Oh, he defers.
I will defer. Okay. Well, you know, I was thinking more or less like Joel Quinville likes to go second in the shootout. So that's where I'm going here.
All right.
All right. Question number one over to Matt. Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill teamed up again this year for what comedy sequel?
22 Jump Street.
See, this happened last time I was here. He got all the easy questions, and I got all the hard questions.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Question number two.
You could have gone first, man.
I'm just saying.
Question number two over to you, Roker. The Captain America sequel, Winter Soldier, saw this legendary actor play Alexander Pierce, the evil leader of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I don't want to go to the ER just yet. Legendary actor, Sam Jackson.
He is in there. But incorrect. That is incorrect. We're looking. Oh, well, I forgot. Matt, you got a chance for a steal here.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't even know this one, man. Jesus. The evil director of S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean.
His name was Alexander Pierce.
Yeah, John Lithgow. I have no idea. Who was it?
We were looking for Robert Redford. Robert Redford.
Oh, that's right.
Not in a million years. Right.
You know, I still haven't caught up with Winter Soldier.
No?
No.
Jeez, man.
I know. I'm way behind.
Yeah. Big fan of the Avengers. All right. Matt is winning 1-0. Question number three is over to him. Matt, what actress played Aunt May in The Amazing Spider-Man 2 the second time she has played the role?
Sally Field.
2-0, Matt K. 2-0, Matt K. Question four over to Roker. Roker, Morgan Freeman, Ashley Judd, and Harry Connick Jr. all appeared in this sequel. The three of them also starred in the first film as well. Name it.
Morgan Freeman.
Yep. Harry Connick Jr.
Harry Connick Jr. and Ashley Judd.
And they were all in the original film as well. This was the sequel.
Boy, oh boy. I should know this, but I don't. I know Matt's going to know this one.
This is a tricky one, actually.
Not Deep Impact 2, is it? No, wait. I have a wasn't he in the adaptations of the Along Came a Spider? No.
Oh, that's a wrong guess as well. We were looking for Dolphin Tale 2. Dolphin Tale 2.
Wow.
Roker, where were you on that one?
Missed that one.
That was a tricky
really?
One.
Really? Morgan wow. Freeman is in that?
Yep.
Yeah, I seem to recall seeing him in the commercial, but wow.
Still only 1-0. And here we are just playing 2014. These movies just came out here. Question five over to you, Matt. Matt, what actor starred in 300 as King Leonidas, but was not in the sequel, 300 Rise of the Empire?
Gerard Butler.
3-0. I'm sorry, it is 3-0, Matt, because you also got the Aunt May question. 3-0, Matt K. We need to get all these, Roker. Here we go.
Okay.
All right. Oh, boy.
You know, if it makes you feel better, I haven't gotten any of your questions
okay,
right either.
Well, all right.
All right. This animated sequel was voiced by Jesse Eisenberg, Jamie Foxx, and Anne Hathaway. They also were all in the original film as well. Animated film. You do have a trip to the ER if you want to use it.
I only have one trip to the ER?
One trip to the ER.
Am I going to Northwestern or am I going to Stroger?
Well,
a big difference.
You never know with Elias.
You never do know with Elias.
Who were the three actors again?
We have Jesse Eisenberg, Jamie Foxx, and Anne Hathaway.
Oh, boy. And I should know this. I'll go to the ER.
Whoa! A trip to the ER.
You kind of have to at this point.
Yeah. Elias Rodriguez, what was the name of that animated film?
Your clue is A South American city.
See if that jars anything.
A South American city. Rio? Two?
Yeah.
So, oh, wow.
Wow.
It was a good trip to the ER.
Yeah, it was a good trip to the ER.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
He is on the board. It's 3-1. He's all still right. Got life here. Question number 7. Matt, what sequel saw Kevin Hart star in a story based on a Steve Harvey book? This one took place around a wedding in Las Vegas.
Say that again.
All right. What sequel saw Kevin Hart star in a story based on a Steve Harvey book? This one took place around a wedding in Las Vegas.
All right. I'm going to go to the ER.
Back-to-back trips to the ER. Elias, what was the name of
this?
Roper
knows this one.
What, just because it's a Kevin Hart movie based on a Steve Harvey book?
You're sitting there really
trying to act like I don't know it.
Yeah, exactly.
Please don't go to the ER. Please don't go to the ER. Please don't go to the ER.
He's got a terrible poker face over there.
It's awful. You want to play cards?
Your clue is, let me think. Man, I got nothing.
That does not help me one bit.
Matt clearly does not know this movie.
No, I don't know. I have no freaking idea. The Wedding Ringer.
So yeah. Do I get to steal?
Chance for a steal.
Think Like a Man 2?
Wow, he has made a comeback here. 3-2, 3-2, and it is the last question of the game. You can tie it up, or Matt's going to win this one.
Oh, boy.
And they always get tougher as they go along.
No pressure.
Oh, he might have a shot at this one. I think this could be a tie ball game here. Dumb and Dumber 2 reunited Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels, but who directed the sequel?
And I cannot go to the ER on this.
You have expired all your trips to the ER.
Who directed the sequel?
Dumb and Dumber 2.
Who directed Dumb and Dumber 2? Judd Apatow.
Incorrect. Matt, you know this one?
Yeah, he was actually using a different name, but it was Stanley Kubrick.
It was the same directors that did the first one, the Farley
Brothers.
Fairly Brothers. Yeah. Dang, I thought you might get that.
Actually,
I thought you might pull it out.
I probably, if I was thinking of it.
Yeah, if I had less beer, I would have gotten
it. Matt wins this one, 3-2. Can we get a handshake here between?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
Nicely done.
Thank you, sir.
If it came down to a tie, we call it a jawbreaker here, Roker, this question would have been to you. Which sequel was worse, 300 or The Amazing Spider-Man 2?
Boy, I'm going to probably guess The Amazing Spider-Man 2 just because nobody got fake blood splattered onto the screen.
Yes, we'd give that one to him. I think it was an absolutely horrific movie.
Terrible.
The real jawbreaker was this. Age of Jeff Daniels, closest to. Matt, you got a guess?
He's got to be 61 years old.
Elias, lock him in at 61. Roker, you got a guess? Age of Jeff Daniels?
You know, that's interesting because I was going to say 59.
Wow, you nailed it. 59 years old, Roker. Yep.
Dead ringer.
Yeah. Well done. Well done. Guy knows his ages.
Yeah.
Of men. Apparently.
Yeah. Good stuff. Wow. Jam-packed jaw, and it comes to an end, Matt.
Yeah. They all have to at some point or another.
It's always so much fun, though.
Indeed.
First and foremost, we got to thank our guest, Al Roker Jr. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it anytime, always.
Definitely, Jawheads. Follow him on Twitter. He's a blast. I follow you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Appreciate it. You in One Direction.
Yes.
That's right. That's probably how they got to you through Ride the Movie.
That probably exactly.
That's what it was.
Yep.
That's
sure,
what it was.
Sure. They were following my movie reviews. Absolutely.
Yep.
We also got to thank the best engineer in the biz, Elias Rodriguez.
Thanks, guys. Again, Happy New Year. And Matt, I'm disappointed that you didn't see the interview because you want theaters to not exist in 5 years or whatever it is.
Yeah, I know. I should have watched it at home, right?
Give us a quick take on it, Elias, because we forgot to mention that when you came out of the jaw box.
For what it was, I really liked it. If you could believe James Franco's character of being just really dumb, then it's really fun the way he just kind of like really falls for how much fun Kim Jong-un is in the movie. But besides that, I think it maybe could have been a different actor who played really dumb. I don't know.
How many Jaws?
But three Jaws. For what it was in the whole hoopla, I liked it.
Three Jaws.
I saw it as well.
Oh, you did.
I think it probably would have played a little bit better for me had I seen it in a theater with people. Laughter is contagious.
Sure.
Or if I'd had maybe a few beers when I had watched it. But, you know, Seth Rogen has cornered the market now on this, you know, adult, buddy, vulgar comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do any more movies with Barbara Streisand. Don't try and be a superhero. Don't try and be something that you're not. Just do these type of movies. This is the end, and this just do this. You've got this down, and
it's a winning formula.
Yeah, it's a total winning formula.
What was he thinking with the Green Hornet, man?
What was he thinking teaming up with Barbara Streisand?
I don't know. Well, that one I can understand, but anyway.
Comedians always want to be taken seriously at some point.
Sure,
they all want to be. Don't do that, Seth Rogen. Just keep doing this because your movies are getting better and better.
So Elias gave it 3 Jaws. How about yourself, Roker?
I'll give it 3 Jaws.
Okay. It's a 3 Jaw movie.
Yeah, I probably would have given it more had I seen it in a theater with some more contagious laughter.
I agree with that. Definitely.
Interesting. Awesome.
All right,
now,
guys.
Wow. Now I'm intrigued to see it, so I might go home and watch it tonight because I can on
support
my phone.
Hey, we also got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to all the sponsors, and thanks to the new 400 theaters.
Yeah, no better theater in all of Chicago. Check out what's playing at their website, thenew400.com.
They have a full liquor bar.
Indeed they do.
We thank them.
So until next week, check us out on Facebook,
follow us on Twitter,
and keep on watching John Rotten Movies.